So Caitlin, we just talked to Jane and Jackie.
Yeah, it was so exciting to get to talk to two authors who wrote Spellbound, which is an exciting, dramatic novel that I had a lot of questions about and a lot of things that I wanted to talk to them about. So it was an exciting conversation and a really interesting look into what goes into writing a contemporary lesbian romance novel. So
yeah, they've definitely set the bar high for us maintaining our questions. And I just feel incredibly spoiled that they gave us their time. So again, before we jump into the interview, Jean and Jackie, from the bottom of our little nerdy reading hearts, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And everyone, enjoy listening.
All right. Hi, everyone. It's Rebecca with the tip of a tongue. Caitlin's hiding out in the background because we have two really phenomenal people here with us today. And I'm just going to volley it over to them and let them introduce themselves because they'll do a better job than I will.
Oh.
Hey, everybody. Well,
My name's Jackie D. I live in California with my wife and our son and our six animals, which is too many, but they're here and they're ours. I love them. Spellbound was my sixth book that I've written with Bold Strokes. And then the seventh, Elimination, actually came out a month later. But Spellbound was the first book that I wrote with anybody else. And it was the first time for me writing in the paranormal mystery genre. I normally write in a military thriller romance category. So it was something that I always wanted to do. And I really like reading paranormals. So Jean and I had only met a few times before that. And I just really liked her. And I had read The Second Wave, which was funny and articulate and really smart. And I thought she would be a good writing partner. And it turns out I was right. So that's kind of how we started working together. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time. So I drove up to Connecticut one weekend because what you don't know about Jean is she will not get in the car for longer than 2 hours. So,
and I 3. Mean, that, like,
so we went up there. I went up there one weekend and we wrote a little bit. We drank a lot and we kind of started putting together Spellbound. And then after that, we tried doing it on Google Docs. Neither of us liked the way that Google Docs actually edited. So we just started passing it back and forth. I would write 5,000 words. Jean would write 5,000 words. We each had kind of our characters that we focused on, but both of us wrote, we shared all the characters with the exception of Sarah and Ayatunde, because I do not speak Puritan, unlike Jean Copeland. Okay. So she did all of the dialogue for Sarah and Ayatunde. If I needed to insert something, I would just highlight and be like, whatever she would say here. So
yeah, I'd get the manuscript back and there'd be a whole scene, and then all in parentheses it would say, however Sarah would say this. So I knew what Sarah was supposed to say. So that was easy for me.
So it's awesome to hear some about you, Jackie. Jean, would you be kind enough to tell us some things about yourself?
Sure. I am born and raised in Connecticut. By day, I'm a high school English teacher. And by summer and by evenings, I write lesfic, but I like genre hop. I'm always into something, trying something different as far as the lesfic stories go. So, yeah, and paranormal, urban fantasy, that was something I'd never done either. And I, you know, never really thought I could. I don't think I ever would have tried it on my own. So when Jackie approached me with the idea, I said, oh, well, yeah, let's give this a try. We don't know what's going to happen. It could be a train wreck and we just have to scrap the whole project, or it could turn out to be an amazing experience. And it absolutely was an amazing experience.
So okay. I want to dive some more into Spellbound, but before we get there, can I ask if you pitched it to your publisher first, or if you wrote it and then pitched it to your publisher?
We pitched it first.
Yeah.
Because we talked to Sandy at Women's Week before we ever wrote a word. And
this is Sandy Lowe, who's with Bold Stroke Books?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we had, this was in Women's Week in 2018. Jackie and I, we met for breakfast and we talked about the idea. And then we also, ran it by Sandy and she said, yeah, get a proposal over. So we got the approval, via the proposal before we had a complete manuscript.
That's how most of mine are done anyway. I get an idea, I send a proposal over and they say, yeah, well, they haven't said no yet. They'll say, yes, you can do this, but change A, B, and C. But they always end up saying yes.
So you only care about D, E, and F? So was it okay that the other ones win?
For the most part, I have to say they're usually right when they do point out A, B, and C. So
we're
it's better just to
just up. That clip. We're going to just send them.
I appreciate that. Right. Thank you.
You drove from Pennsylvania to Connecticut, and then you created this paranormal, which neither of you had ever done. So what kind of research just goes into starting a genre that is not your forte?
I showed up in Connecticut with quite a few. I had researched a bunch of different quasi-famous witches throughout history. And Jean is somewhat of an expert of the Salem witch trials already. Being an English teacher, she teaches the Crucible. And so she had already like a working knowledge of that aspect of the book. And then we knew we were going to create something like Morgan Le Fay, as being, you're not really sure if she's the antagonist or protagonist throughout the story. So it was, I brought with me to Connecticut as much research as I could possibly bring without it being too overwhelming about witchcraft and the Wiccan religion. And we just kind of went from there. And then I think that's really all the research we did. There probably should have been more, but that's all.
Well, in our defense, I mean, we had a narrative. We already had a narrative. Mm-hmm. So we just had to be, we just had to be factually accurate for the historical stuff that we were going to tie into our fiction narrative. And so, I feel like we were able to pull that off. I think we did a pretty good job of it. Otherwise, certainly we would have been skewered on Goodreads if we didn't kind of reach that level of authenticity that we were hoping for.
I was really struck by the fact that this was a collaborative effort. To me, is kind of blowing my mind. And we've talked a little bit about the research that went into creating this book, but I'm interested to hear more about like actually building the world that your characters are inhabiting and what it was like to do that with another person.
You're going to be disappointed in this.
I have to say that Jackie is one of the most rational, non-ego driven, creatively generous people I've ever worked with. And I didn't know how creatively generous she was prior to working with her or writing with her, but I knew she was a quality human being that I would not have any issues working with. I mean, the flow was so easy. It was so, I mean, we just worked together so well. I mean, there were times when we like didn't even need to speak. It was just the scene transfer back and forth that did the speaking for us. You know, once we got the basic plot line down from beginning to end together, after that, it was just all filling in the blanks. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to write about Sarah and I and Tuesday today. Oh, I'm going to write about Hazel and Raven. And, Morgan is kind of like, I feel like Morgan is our love child. That's the product of like the two, our two minds, because I feel like we had a pretty even hand in kind of voicing Morgan. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jackie?
Yeah, I mean, as far as world building went, like what Jean was saying, we would just kind of come up with our own version of what was taking place, and we would kind of, some things we talked about, some things we didn't. It was like that game you played as a kid where someone starts a sentence and then the next mm-hmm. person kind of writes the next sentence for it. That's kind of what the entirety of Spellbound was. And Like, we threw in Hellhounds, and I was like, Jean, what do you think? And she's like, yeah, sure, whatever, let's do Hellhounds. And then, like, the one thing we knew for sure, we did discuss that Morgan had to be in New Orleans, just because that was kind of, like, the epicenter of paranormal realms, the United States. And I actually think our editor tried to talk us out of New Orleans, and that was the one thing that we said no to, that she had to be there because it was the only thing that made sense. And then everything else... All these places mentioned, they kind of have their own histories to them and the paranormal anyway. Salem, Massachusetts, obviously, Roanoke, Virginia, like all of these areas. We didn't have to do a ton of world building because it was already kind of built in. We just had to create the people and how we saw them in it. And it probably should. Everyone always asks, wasn't it hard writing with someone? And I keep thinking that maybe we did it wrong because it just wasn't. It was real easy for us.
It really was a great time. Yeah. I know. Well, unfortunately, we have no stories about, like there's not going to be a Jackie chapter in my tell-all book someday. There's just not.
Jean, I'm hurt by that.
No, we still have time. I mean, you know, my memoirs won't be out until I'm old.
The world building too, we had discussed when I went to Connecticut, the kind of bad guys that we wanted also. So that just kind of fell into, it just all kind of easily fell together. So, and then she did throw a curveball at me with the goddess Athena. I got the manuscript back and I was like, what the, there's Athena's here now? And I was like, all right, whatever. I guess Athena's in it. So. That's how that went down. I don't even know what she was thinking.
When I was writing it, I'm like, she's not going to go for this. And I'm like, all right, fuck it. I'm just going to put it in there. And if she tells me that it like takes it way out of the realm of what we're going for, then I'll just take it out. But I just sent it over and she never said anything. So like, okay, I guess we're keeping it.
Is there anything that did get cut? Athena made it. Did anybody fall out?
I even brought in Marie Laveau.
Yeah. Oh, as a person who lived in New Orleans for 3 years, believe me, I caught that.
I don't know. After a while, it just became, well, how many cameos can we put in here before we've gone overboard?
We actually just got knocked on that by a reviewer just today, saying that it was like two writers just got together and drank wine and threw everything into a story that they could imagine.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like that sometimes, doesn't it?
So when the second printing happens, that's going to be the thing on the front cover, right? It's just everything in wine. So you had mentioned bad guys just a moment ago, Jackie. And in this novel, it really does seem to focus on bad guys being masculine energy people. Was that intentional the whole way?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So... Jean and I were kind of political junkies, and so we kind of wanted to do a representation of the current state of how we view the current state of the world and how it's kind of this type of toxicity has been taking place since the beginning of time. Bad guys have always had a propensity to try to take down what they perceive to be the weaker of everyone. So yes, I personally think toxic masculinity is one of the worst things in the world, and it has ruined civilizations and lives and all kinds of things. So I think that, but most of my books, the overarching theme, most of the bad guys are pretty toxic masculine. So Blaze was actually, Blaze himself is actually true to Morgan Le Fay's, if you want to call it her true story of like Arthurian times. Blaze was her counterpart. So that part didn't really need to be done. But as far as the other three, I think it was intentional. What do you think, Jean?
Well, I mean, since 2016, I don't think that the powers that be could have made it any easier for us to come up with toxic, unappealing characters of evil that are trying to take down the society in an effort to push their agenda through. Blaze has been around for all time, but in this particular time period, he's got some minions that are really, really eager to kind of flip that the world of good on its back. And so, you know, maybe there's some familiarity in the three characters that kind of are doing Blaze's bidding here on Earth right now.
It was intentional. When you kind of see that they're trying to like gather enough followers to embolden or empower Blaze to be able to take on Morgan at the end. That was intentional, as far as hate and fear kind of breed this overwhelming power, and it elevates certain people in our society to the point where we think that they're untouchable or undefeatable, because their hate is really the only thing, the only force in this world that's just as strong as love. And so it's when you get enough people, it's easier to trigger than love too, right? Like, it's easier to be mad at something and hate something than it is to have empathy for something and to love something. So it's easier to get people riled up. And it was more of a careful of the things you're listening to and the things you're following, because it's easy to fall into what you don't even realize is an evil plot that you're an unwilling participant in. So
I mean, it was a really interesting book to read, because there's so many different like levels to the story. There's like the base level, like, because somebody I think could read this and not perhaps get that interpretation of until it's kind of a little bit more in their face. And I was interested that the sort of the evil characters were aided by women. I thought that was a really good way to add like that nuance, especially about our some of our current political discussions. So we've talked about like the sort of negative characters here. I'm really interested, because you have spoken earlier this evening about how you sort of shared characters and you wrote for all of them, sort of. Which of your characters in these books would you like want to grab a beer with and hang out with?
Go ahead, Jane.
I would totally want to hang out with Sarah. She lived in the Puritan times. I would love to pick her brain and hear about what it was really like to live under that patriarchal Puritan hysteria. So I mean, she would be my first choice, but I really kind of like all of them as a squad. I mean, you know, if I was hanging out with all five of them, Morgan especially, you know, I think it would be a really great time.
Yeah, I mean, I think my first inclination would probably be Sarah Ayatunde, just because you wouldn't have another chance to kind of talk to someone of that era. But I think it would be a lifelong regret to not have a drink with Morgan Le Fay.
Like, preach, girl, preach.
Yeah. So
it's one of my favorite quotes in the book, like one of the, there's a lot of really good like jokes throughout the text, just little one-offs that I love the whole time. But I love when Hazel's trying to figure out what to wear to go meet with Morgan, and she basically makes a quip at the side of like, well, a Wonder Woman t-shirt isn't the right thing to wear. Because it's like, what do you do to meet Morgan Le Fay? Well, Wonder Woman, while empowering, probably not right for this particular woman of power. So there's a lot of wonderful little quips throughout the book that I really appreciated as a reader.
Jean is a master of dialogue. She honestly, in our world, does not get enough credit for how funny she is and her ability to write dialogue. I'm better at like the world building and the overall plots, and Jean is, she's fantastic. Like, sometimes she'd send it back to me and I would just be crying laughing so hard, because I'm like, where does she even come up with this stuff, man? Yeah, she's real funny.
So
I guarantee most of the one-offs are hers.
So we'll talk about this a little bit further in a minute about other things that you two create and do in this immense world that you're constantly building in your profession and elsewhere. But since you build the world, Jackie, and Jean, you do the dialogue, I have to ask about the quippy Napoleon wine scene, because I really love the whole, you know, drink this very expensive whatever, and Raven's just like, it could be box wine, I wouldn't know the difference.
It was actually me, yeah.
And then is it Hazel who basically goes, oh my God, is that a whatever, and lists the exact year? And we all have those people in our life. Sadly, I think I'd be with Raven. So,
yeah, I don't, I'm not discriminatory when it comes to my wine. So box wine, I feel like $50,000 wine would be absolutely wasted on me. So I'm just as good with box stuff. But yeah, I remember, I think I actually wrote that one because I remember spending 45 minutes looking up like the most expensive wine in the world and that one that you could still get a hold of. And then I had to do like the whole history of it, how it came about, because Morgan obviously would have had to have known the person. So yeah, that I think it was like $75,000 or something.
I think I added her. I think I added the part that she actually knew Napoleon and got the wine from him.
Yeah, see, we wrote a lot of it together.
Yeah, we really did.
So kind of wrapping up, so we don't give too much of the book away because we want people to go read it and enjoy this fantastic and amazing thing you created together. Can we talk a little bit about time travel and how you negotiated and navigated writing a narrative where that happens? Because sure. People feel very strongly about their time travel timelines. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine trying to do it myself.
Yeah. God, how did we come up with it? It's hard when we start doing like talking about the book because we wrote it in the beginning of 2019. So sometimes people, I forget that it just came out to people. So people ask us questions and I'm like, gosh, that was a long time ago.
We're not really big on writing stuff down either. Keeping like records and stuff.
Well, I came to you with the idea, when I came to you with the idea of Spellbound, wasn't it that they were coming from the Salem witch trials and kind of plopping down? Yeah. So it had always started there. And the idea of them being tethered to a family member would be the only magical way to essentially get them there without having to go through any science mumbo jumbo or, you know, because you don't want those people breathing down your neck about anything. So it's much easier just to cast a spell and whoop, yep. She shows up there. So we thought it would be funny. What would a woman from 1692 think about the world of, you know, 2019 at the time? And especially the fact that she was in love with an enslaved person. And her getting to come forward, and not that we still don't have a tremendous way to go when it comes to people of color, but just the transition that has taken place from in the last 300 years. So it was always an important part of the story. Are you raising your hand to talk, Jean, or are you just messing with Charlotte?
My cat is like rubbing all over me.
Well, you have anything you want to add about time travel, Jean?
Yeah, that was fun trying to figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. Because it's actually, you know, Ayatunde is the one that kind of figures out. I mean, they didn't, what I really like about Ayatunde and Sarah is that while they're extremely intelligent, brilliant women, they were a victim of their time period where education was very limited. And for women, but even in a puritanical society, the access to information was purely Bible based. So any kind of powers and any kind of incantations would automatically be assumed to be evil. So the two of them had no idea what they were capable of doing until they were in this desperate moment that required Ayatunde to do something for Sarah. And it just kind of, you know, came about. And I just thought it was really fun. Jackie and I trying to figure out, all right, well, Sarah comes through first, but she lands here later. But she had opened the portal. And then the evil ones follow her through. So I thought that the process of it was fun to just kind of work out together. I really came into it with no preconceived notions at all about how to write time travel, but I feel like, you know, two brains are better than one when it comes to trying something new.
You both have mentioned that you haven't written paranormal or sort of fantastical works before. Do you think you will again after this?
I think we're talking about doing sequels to Spellbound. We haven't even talked about if we're going to do them together or we're going to do them individually.
Right. We at least have something else on the back burner right now, but I would absolutely love to do a sequel or two. make it into even a series of three if we find that we want to continue together on it. I think that'd be fantastic.
We also get Morgan is an interesting character because people either absolutely love her or could not stand her. But we get, at least in the reviews that I've read, more often than not, people want Morgan to have her own story. So it'd be kind of a prequel of sorts. So that would be an interesting thing to kind of take on because you could kind of abandon the other characters and really just focus on Morgan's story. Mm-hmm. But we definitely left the ending open for both sets, both couples to continue because obviously Raven and Hazel now have to go up into the mountains and find immortality for Raven if she's going to stay with Hazel. And then Hazel has the opportunity to take over being the queen of the witches for Morgan, but what does that mean for her? And then Ayatunde and Sarah, at the end of the book, you saw them kind of pass away together, but Jean wrote it like that with the intention of being able to fill in the time, that 40 years in between, with them actually doing some, I think you were thinking about doing more time hopping, weren't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I will leave it at that.
All right. It
sounds like you also set up a lot of characters in that narrative because kind of there's the line about the misfits finding security and home with Sarah and Ayatunde. Mm-hmm. After Thomas is passing and they take on the house. So, which I'm always here for a bunch of misfits getting together.
So. Me too.
Yeah, when we wrote it, we intentionally left it open in case, well, it really depends on how well it does, I guess, if we write a sequel to it or not, but
that's what I've been told.
It was intentional.
But you just mentioned, Jackie, that you wrote it last year. So it was written, and Jean, you guys wrote it in what, the winter of 2019?
From January through May.
Okay.
Of 2019.
And then you just had another book, Follow Spellbound, and come out. Is it Elimination just dropped? Jackie, did those overlap when you were writing them?
Yes. Yeah, I was writing them at the same time. But that's the second time I've done that. I also wrote Lucy's Chance and Pursuit at the same time, which I'll never do that again. But this one, writing with Jean was much easier when you have a partner, because you're responsible for 40,000 words, not 80,000. So, and because the two stories are so different, it wasn't hard to flip-flop back and forth. And Elimination is the conclusion of my After Dark series. So I have known where that was going to go for a long time. So it wasn't difficult. It wasn't as difficult if I was working on a different story that I wasn't comfortable with or wasn't as familiar with the characters as I am with the After Dark characters. So it was fun, though.
Jean, were you writing a woman's treasure? One woman's treasure?
I was in the beginning stages of that, and I wrote the bulk of it over the summer, but there was Spellbound editing that had to be done while I was writing it. And again, just like Jackie said, One Woman's Treasure is straight up contemporary, all the feels romance. So it was very different from Spellbound. So I never kind of got, you know, lost in that loop of, okay, who am I today? And what am I writing about today? So it was not hard to do. I don't know how Jackie did two of her own books at the same time. I wouldn't even attempt that.
It wasn't intentional per se. it wasn't supposed to work out like that. It's a long story that I won't bore everyone with, but that's how it went down. And I said I would never, ever, ever do that again because both of them had like killers in it. Both of them were chasing bad guys. Like I write heroes in, you know, kind of terrorist situations, and they both had that. And I was real worried that I overlapped things together. So that's one of the few times that I was like rereading and rereading and rereading and rereading to make sure that I wasn't doing that. So I'll never again.
Did they all stay separate, or have you now, time later, found something that did overlap that you didn't
catch? No, they all stayed separate, luckily. So,
Pursuit, that good.
Yeah, Pursuit was easy. Also, it went, you know, Infiltration, Pursuit, and Elimination. So the series are easier to stay focused in because it's characters you've been with. I mean, I've been with Tyler and Brooke, who are the main characters in that series, since 2014. So we've been together a long time.
Are you planning another series immediately after this one, now that you've wrapped up on one?
I get a lot of requests for sequels to The Rise of the Resistance. I get quite a few requests for a sequel too. I haven't decided if I'm going to write another one to that yet, just because it's sci-fi and takes place real far in the future. I'd like to, but I don't know. I'm kind of going back and forth on it right now. It sounds very strange, but the characters aren't talking to me yet. So regardless of how often the readers say they want a sequel, if they aren't talking to me yet, there's nothing I can do about it. The other one that I get a lot of requests for, I actually just took one of the secondary characters and I'm using her in a project that Gene and Aaron Zach and I are working on together. So I think I'm going to circumvent the sequel writing process by doing that. But I would like to write sequels to Spellbound. The Rise of the Resistance is a possibility. And besides that, my wife would like it if I wrote a sequel to Lucy's Chance. But I don't know if that's going to happen. So we'll see.
Maybe just an anniversary gift for her or something.
Yeah, so nothing active right now.
Well, and Jean, I'd love to hear, so you have a book coming out in July. What can you tell us about that?
It is, like I said, I'm going back to contemporary romance. As you know, Spellbound, paranormal, urban fantasy. My book before that, The Ashford Place, was mystery romance. So I'm going back to contemporary romance, and I've taken the advice of or answered the call of my readers who do not care for the fade to black scenes. Woo! So in
no more this, beaver damming.
No more beaver damming. the waters are flowing. The juices are flowing. And so it's kind of, you know, like just a sweet old fashioned, something gets stolen by accident, and then this couple meets, and it's basically a friends to lovers romance. So there's a lot of complications with feelings, and both women are sort of newly out of relationships, but at various stages of their you know, their recovery from them. So, you know, they decide that, well, you know, what we both need just really good friend. We need a friend to kind of navigate the rest of this.
To work with lesbians.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we all make a valiant effort. You know, we should be appreciated for the effort that we make. So it's fun. I like them. I like the characters a lot, and they're definitely people that I'd hang around with. Yeah, I don't. Other than the evil ones that we wrote in Spellbound, I kind of like the people I create.
That's good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm sure it makes writing them easier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we have to surround ourselves with people we may not care too much for in the real world. So, you know, let's have a little escape.
So you mentioned a project with Aaron Zach, who I know, or I believe you have partnered up with for Fierce Femme Media. Is that something that you can talk with us more about?
Yeah. Aaron, we actually texted her before we got on here with you guys tonight and told her we were cheating on her tonight. So, there's Jean, Aaron, myself, and then two of our other friends, the Stacys, or we lovingly refer to them as the Stacy. We do the Weekly Wind Down together, which is our podcast, obviously. And then Aaron, Jean, and I have also, well, and the Stacys too, although it seems to be the three of us that are much more active in it. But I think that's because we do the writing. We started kind of our own marketing company that, the only way that Lesfit gets out there is if we market ourselves and kind of, like you guys know, that's why you have authors on your podcast. So we decided that we would, Aaron Zach is incredibly talented with marketing and designing and kind of web design and things of that nature. So she kind of spearheads that portion of it where we send her quotes and pictures and reviews and she puts them together for us. And it's an endeavor that is in the early stages. Eventually, we would like it to be something much bigger than that. We would like to start hosting other podcasts with other podcasters and start like a network of that nature. We'd like to start doing marketing for other authors. It would be nice too, eventually, if we were able to produce our own books and things like that. But that's all, it takes all kinds of baby steps, and it's a, it's slow going, especially because all of us work full time. Also, we all have families, and it's really difficult to carve out time between that and everything else that we do, especially writing takes up a tremendous amount of time as it is. So yeah, that's something we work on together. And then the book the three of us are working on together, we're tearing Erin Zach out of her comfort zone. She's writing a serial killer book with us. So
ooh. I love a good serial killer book.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to ask questions, but I'm also like, please tell me more.
Taking secondary characters from some of our more popular books that people really liked and throwing them all into, we're drinking wine and throwing them all in and seeing what happens.
Okay, so like on a marketing level, so intelligent because you have a base readership, and then just also on a literary level, you need a beta reader. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
We're actually about, well, we're what, about 8,000 words in now? 7,000?
Yeah. Are you writing this three, like all three of you at the same time?
Same way we back.
But three of you instead of you two. It's also including Erin.
Yeah.
Yep.
Same process, easy peasy.
It's a little bit different because like Spellbound, we created brand new characters. This one, the characters are already established, so it's a little bit more difficult to write for them because they definitely have their own voices from their previous stories. So until I think we get more comfortable, because we're still only 7,000 words in, that's nothing in a book. Until we all get more comfortable with kind of how they behave and flirt and interact, it's kind of, we let each other write our own sections. Where in Spellbound, she wrote parts of Raven and Hazel, I wrote parts of Sarah and Ayatunde, like we were interchanging them. But I think we eventually will interchange, and we just have to get a little bit more used to it. Like I called Erin the other night, and I said, I forget what I asked her, something about tell me about Tony's annoying habits so I know whether or not that they're gonna bother me or I'm gonna think they're cute. Like we just don't know each other's character yet. So it's an interesting process though. Erin's crazy creative and smart, and it's really fun to get to write with like your best friends. So
yeah,
it's a good time. Sure. And none of us really get angry or our feelings hurt about stuff. So if we don't like something, we just send it back and go, no, we're not doing it that way.
And we're used to Erin's inadvertent insults anyway. So
Zach.
You had mentioned very briefly in passing, and I don't want you to mention it so briefly. I want people to be able to find you. What is the Weekly Wind Down and where can people find it?
The Weekly Wind Down is a podcast that we try to do every week, but it's difficult because there are five of us and two of us live on the East Coast and three of us live on the West Coast. It started out that we talked about culture and society and a lot of LGBT issues and marriage and parenting and all of this, all of those kinds of things. And then Trump happened. And so now it has turned much more into the world's on fire kind of thing and updates about politics and stuff, which really irritates Stacey because she could not care less about politics. It's just painful for her to sit through. So we're trying to alternate every week now, but we interview a lot of our authors at Bold Strokes also. And we get drunk every single week, which is sometimes painful when we record on Mondays. Erin drinks the potato wine. She's a rebel. She won't drink the regular wine with us. But it's, I don't know. What else is it about, Jean?
I think you covered it all. I mean, you know, we come on with an idea, and then the drunker we get, the more philosophical we get about, you know, things going on. And, you know, it's, we vent a lot. And I think that we touch on a lot of aspects that really aren't funny about what's going on now. But I think that because we joke and we laugh and we're drinking, that maybe it provides a little bit of relief about some of the horrible, scary things that are going on with the administration. And you know, Trump is a nightmare, but really his enablers are the ones that we really, you know, they're the ones that are really doing all the damage. So, you know, we bring a little levity to that situation. I know I need it because I could just fucking wring people's necks. So it definitely helps me vent in a healthy way.
We also get a lot of listener questions about politics. And like a few weeks ago, they asked us to explain what like a caucus was. And so we do that kind of stuff too. Although we say on there a lot, and I'll say it again, the people who say they get their news from us should really stop doing that, because we're not a good source of news, like, at all. Hey,
listen, if people are getting it from Fox News only, we have to even it out by providing us.
Well, someone who listens to Fox is listening to us, I guarantee.
No, but we're building up the anti-Fox momentum.
We haven't gotten the South Dakota yet. I don't know what it...
You're providing breadcrumbs for people to follow and find additional resources. So I'm not going to let you undersell yourself.
Except South Dakota. Except South Dakota. We have listeners in every single state and in 30 countries except freaking South Dakota, and we don't know what we're doing wrong.
We have to make a pilgrimage there. South Dakota.
I've never been. I've been to North, but I've never been to South Dakota.
Let's do a podcast. Wait a minute. We gotta do a podcast from the Mountain of Presidents.
All right. So, Gene and Jackie, where can people find the two of you on the internet? Or where do you want them to find you on the internet?
Yeah, okay, that's better. Well, I'm on Facebook. I have an author page, Gene Copeland Author. I am on Insta and Twitter at Jeannie Copes, Twitter at Jeannie Copes Author on Insta. Hit me up.
Follow her on Twitter. She's hella funny, and she's always getting put on timeout because of her comments about the president. It's very funny to watch unfold. I am on Facebook. It's under Jackie D. It lists under Jackie Dwyer, though, because they won't let me use a D for some reason. And then Twitter, I'm jdwyer81, but I'm almost never on Twitter. And there's too many people, but I just can't do it. And then Instagram, jackied1981, I think. And then weekly wind down, we're on Podbean, Stitcher, iTunes, anywhere that you normally get your podcasts from. So
download us.
I actually just was watching. I haven't listened to last week's yet. I was just making sure it was in my queue. So.
Oh God, we fell into a rabbit hole about whether or not Taylor Swift is gay. So just.
The last book we talked about was in development by Rachel Spangler, which is loosely inspired by T Swift. So I'm the wrong person to ask right now. So. Thanks for that, Caitlin.
I watched that documentary. I think about Taylor's.
It's Americana.
Yeah, I watched it and I can't stop thinking about it. And if that's in my brain, then it's going to be in your brain too, Rebecca. That's just how it works.
Let me tell you something. I fell down such a deep, deep rabbit hole about a year ago about whether or not Taylor Swift was gay. And I was dragging everyone down with me. I was texting Aaron, I was texting Stacey. I was like, you guys come with me. It's incredible.
We appreciate you. And we appreciate both of you for doing this. Thank you for being like the two people to break the ice and help us figure out how to interview you.
Thank you. We are happy to be part of this maiden voyage of author interviews. We love it. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll get you guys all the way across. Like, you're setting the standard for everybody going forward, and I can't think of two better people to speak.
Okay, guys, you're welcome.